Okay, so today on the show I have Thomas Heghammer, and we're talking about, he has drafted a book chapter called Interpersonal Trust on Jihadi Internet Forums. I think this is fits in with the Loopcast's theme on information security and terrorism, and I think the book chapter is a sort of perfect, you know, combination of the two, because you know, the forums, as we'll, you know, sort of hear in the discussion, you know, are widely used in sort of, for, you know, disseminating and sort of engaging with, you know, jihadi, material. But at the same time, you do have this problem with, you know, you're participating on an online forum. So you do have the issue of trust, security, and sort of, surveillance. So today, Thomas will hopefully, you know, will walk us through his paper, and we'll have a discussion on basically jihadi use of the internet, and with a particular focus on forums. So I want to start off with describe these forums to us. And what I mean by describe the forums, I mean in terms of sort of informational exchange. You know, who is participating on these forums? And what sort of information are they exchanging? What are they talking about? What are they writing about?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. So the forums are basically digital message boards. And they all look more or less the same. They consist of different sections, each of which is composed of threads or conversations, and each thread and conversation consists of a number of posts or individual messages. And it's the same, basically the same platform or technology that's used in a lot for a lot of other message boards on all kinds of different themes. And this is a platform that emerged in the early 2000s. I think around 2000 we saw the first Islamist forums, and they've stayed roughly the same until today. And the content, for the most part, is propaganda products, films, statements, manuals, and other products put out there by organizations, mobilized activists who are involved in a violent struggle somewhere, and who produce propaganda and want to disseminate this to a worldwide audience. That is the main type of content, and the most visible type of content you find there. And then, of course, you also have the kind of the conversations between users. Typically, the forum will have at the top a list of banners, basically advertising for the various products, and underneath you'll have room for people to comment and exchange and write whatever they want. And so you get a lot of just general kind of conversation about propaganda products, about things that are in the news, about ideological issues, about these sort of jihadi cultural products like poetry and some jihadi music and so on. So it's sort of a town square, if you will, where the inhabitants get together and discuss, you know, the order of the day and whatever kind of preoccupies them, and where they can get the latest news, and where they can get the latest products.
So, in terms of, you know, what is sort of the main language being used on these forums? Are we talking about it's just Arabic, and then the user has to come to these forums knowing Arabic, or are we talking about there's more sort of, you know, Arabic, Urdu, and sort of other dialects and other sort of languages being used? Or is it just the expectation is that you know Arabic when you come to these sort of forums, and then when you engage, it's also in Arabic?
Oh no, there are forums in all kinds of languages, the big forums also have language-specific sections. So, in one and the same forum, you'll have different sort of departments for different languages. The main language, though, is Arabic. The biggest and most influential forums are in Arabic, but I think second comes probably English and perhaps Urdu, but then there's also a non-negligible forum population that converses in Russian, in French, in German, in Asian languages, and many more. But Arabic is the lingua franca of this community.
So when one approaches these forums, what is sort of the end goal? I mean, not the end goal, but sort of you made mention that it's mostly propaganda. Is it sort of propaganda being used with the intent to radicalize individuals, or with intent to recruit them to the jihad, or are sort of these forums being used for operational and sort of planning measures?
Well, most of the propaganda products are clearly designed to motivate people to join, to recruit in a broad sense, and to they're means for different organizations to market themselves to gain visibility at the expense of competing organizations and so on and so forth. So they serve the ends that propaganda serves in other contexts and other conflicts. But of course, it's not only propaganda. We find there some of the material is also of a more kind of functional or kind of instructional nature. There are manuals for how to use certain weapons and how to recipes for building bombs and other dangerous substances and so on. I think these forums are very useful for the organizations to gain visibility, to recruit members, to inspire people to donate money, to instruct people in military skills, and just generally get people wound up about the jihadi cause.
I'm sort of interested, before we move on to the issue of trust, how do sort of the use of forums compare to the use of social media in the sense that, as an internet user and as somebody who's grown up with the internet, it almost seems like messaging boards are sort of antiquated, when compared to Facebook, Twitter, let's say for the heck of it, Pinterest. But I mean, in terms of use and sort of propagation, how would you compare forums versus Facebook, Twitter, and other forms of social media?
It's a very good question. I'm not an expert in social media by any stretch of the imagination, but the things that strike me as being different are, first of all, the fact that in the main social media platforms, you have a profile that you can connect with other users. You can connect with the users that you want, and that means user profiles can be connected in a network, for good and for bad. So it allows you to sort of select whom you wish to communicate with, whom you want to sort of see the most sort of sensitive parts of your profile. But then on the other hand, it allows authorities potentially to map the network and, you know, position you exactly in that network. Contrast that with the forums, where you will participate, you know, with a profile, but that profile will not sort of will usually not be kind of, will not have sort of will not be connected to other users. There won't be a sort of a means to, at least not very easily, map people in a network. Now, of course, you can use sort of network analysis software to position forum users also in a network. But it's that you have to do, kind of analysts have to do that themselves. Is the platform doesn't do it for them. So the forums are basically, they're more public, they're more open. When you post something there, anyone with a user account can see it. Whereas on Facebook and Twitter, or especially on Facebook, you can sort of limit your audience. So that makes forums somewhat more, that gives forums a somewhat larger reach, I suppose, in that you don't have to be sort of friends with the administrators to a particular propaganda producer to access the material. It's all out there. But you're right to say that the forums are an antiquated platform. They basically remain the same since 99, 2000, and they lack a lot of the functionalities and the flexibility that the social media have.
So I want to sort of move on to sort of discuss the issue of trust. And in my notes, I have it in quotes, because I think, you know, the way I want to approach this question is in two forms. One is, as an analyst, when you approach these forums, you know, what is sort of the rubric and the metric that you're using to gauge trust between users? And then, you know, part of this question is, you know, what are users using to sort of establish trust? You know, and not only with each other, but with the medium itself, with the forum itself.
Right. So I think it's useful to start by thinking about why trust is important. And trust is important for cooperation. It's basically it's a prerequisite for cooperation between humans. If there is no trust, you will not engage with your interlocutors, at least not very 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 deeply. Trust is usually defined as a willingness to accept vulnerability or risk based on some expectation about your interlocutor's behavior. So and any type of, you know, cooperation or communication, you know, exposes you to, varying degrees of risk or vulnerability. So you want to make sure that the people that you deal with are trustworthy. And the more sensitive, risky the activity, the higher the criteria for trusting, if you will, the more trustworthy your interlocutor needs to be. So the way I went about kind of gauging levels of trust on the forums was by looking first at positive evidence of trust and then at negative evidence of trust, meaning expressions of distrust. The latter is much easier to observe than the first. So it's much easier to see expressions of distrust because they're all over the forums, and they take the form of warnings to other users about certain threats or certain forms of surveillance or warnings about suspected infiltrators and so on. They can also take the form of just general advice on how to avoid surveillance or how to vet someone for trustworthiness. So it's quite easy to observe extreme distrust, I show that in the paper that there's a lot of evidence of that on the forums. Now, it's much more difficult to measure positive trust because when people trust someone, when you have what we call a trust exchange, and when there is a decision to trust it, people usually don't say, they don't declare, "Oh, now I trust you, therefore we can proceed this exchange." The exchange just happens, the form, its manifestation depends on the kind of the nature of the trust exchange. So it can take presumably a wide range of forms. Also, we don't have many good first person accounts of the trusting process. We don't have, I wasn't able to find many good accounts in which a person says, I was on the forums and I wasn't sure who to trust, but then I came across this guy and he said this and that, and that made me more confident in him and so on, and therefore I decided to proceed with so on. That we don't have, and so we have to rely on some imperfect indicators or proxies, and the thing that I focused on was the volunteering of sensitive information, the volunteering of personal information, real personal information that would that revealed a user's either real name, location, or something else about his or her biography, on the assumption that revealing such information was reflected a decision to accept vulnerability. If you put that information out there on a forum, then there is a risk that your interlocutor might use that to target you if that person is not trustworthy, if that person happens to be, for example, a government agent or something. And so I looked in a sample of messages for such sensitive information. And as it happened, I found almost none of it. I found few, if any, examples of kind of exchanges between people that involved the volunteering of kind of personal information. Everybody operated under a pseudonym, and everybody kind of conversed, you know, around, about generalities, and seemed very reluctant to provide any information that could kind of identify or locate them, which means that you know, if this is generally the case, it means that it's very hard for two people to meet online, people who don't know each other in real life, to meet online for the first time and arrange for example a recruitment meeting. How do they get from that, from the forum, how do they get to the same physical location so that they can take the process further? That's very difficult if nobody's willing to make the first step and say, and suggest a location. So that apparent fear of revealing sensitive information presumably inhibits, direct recruitment exchanges, and presumably also, and direct kind of fundraising calls. You can urge people to donate money, but if you don't provide them with an account number or an address or where to send the money, you're not going to get any. People need to be willing to accept that risk, and it seems that for the most part they're not on the forums, at least. So combination of a virtual absence of sensitive information combined with a large amount of expressions of distrust suggested to me that the level of trust on the forum generally was very low. Now, exactly how low is, of course, difficult to say, and I'm certainly not suggesting that nobody ever conducted a direct recruitment exchange or a fundraising exchange on the forums, but to the extent that it happens, it must happen, very infrequently. And this, I think, is interesting because it runs against at least some of the expectations of the literature about on the internet and how it is supposed to be a boon for terrorism, for terrorist groups. It seems that the trust problem is a very significant one. That the organizations struggle with, it must frustrate them quite a lot, because the internet, without the trust problem, would be a formidable tool. It would be, the forums could, in theory, serve as the sort of the LinkedIn for terrorist labor, or the Craigslist for bomb supplies or whatnot, which would make sort of coordination of terrorist operations and recruiting and fundraising much easier. But fortunately for us, it's not that simple.
So I'm sort of curious. I mean, where do you put paranoia in the sense of, understanding distrust and trust? I mean, is paranoia a sort of a sub idea of distrust, or is this sort of, a natural consequence of, engaging on forums that, everybody's sort of surveilling and observing?
Well, I think paranoia in this context is not a scientific term. It's kind of a a loose term that I use for an atmosphere that I'm seeing on the forums in which people are hypersensitive about but, the potential for infiltration and deception. Then the slightest little sign of that confirms their fears is kind of is highlighted and circulated and so on. So I guess when I talk about paranoia, I'm talking about a very high level of distrust or a very low level of interpersonal trust. A situation in which my small things that to an objective eye probably doesn't suggest deception or infiltration does so to the paranoid.
So, I mean, I'm sort of curious then, what are trust strategies being used on these forums? What are the sort of signals and signs that a user would use to sort of trust somebody? I mean, you pointed to sort of, divulging personal information, a real name or an address. But I mean, what are the sort of signals and the signs that the users would use between each other or between them and in the forum? Tom? Thomas?
Hello?
Hello. Oh, did we just cut out there? I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Should I repeat my question?
No, I think I heard your question. So in my paper I use a theoretical framework drawn from what's known as signaling theory, which is based on the idea that you're more likely to trust someone who makes a kind of a costly sacrifice, or that you're looking for signs, be it a verbal sign or some other external sign that suggests that the person you're dealing with, has incurred a cost. So that he's less likely to simply imitate the kind of the property that you're looking for. So there so for example, if someone comes along and pretend, and says that he is a former jihadi with 10 years of experience from six jihad fronts, you're more likely to trust the person if that person has, for example, an amputated leg from and battle scars and so on, than if he has none of that. And you're probably even more likely to trust the person who has, lost a leg than you are with a person who simply makes an extreme statement, because making a statement is not costly. Talk is cheap, as we know. And that same principle I think applies on the forums. I think that that users are looking for signs in other user profiles and other user behavior that tell them something about the kind of the expense, the cost, or the sacrifice that the person has made for the jihadi cause. Now, what is that exactly in an online context is of course the big question. But I'm arguing in the paper that even though a lot of things can be faked and kind of imitated on the forums, there are certain things that are harder to fake than others. For example, time spent on the jihadi forums. And the forums are designed in such a way as to highlight some of this information. For example, every user profile will display, you know, the length of time a person has been on the forum, the number of messages is posted, and often, you know, some kind of status provided to that individual by the forum administrator. So that is a way for other users to see how much time a person has spent on the forum, which is not, of course, not alone. That alone is probably not enough to make someone trust that person, but it probably helps to show that someone is interested enough in this kind of activity that is willing to spend, you know, a substantial amount of time on the forums. Now, another thing that I think is being used to kind of signal a past expenditure for the cause is what I call sort of complex knowledge or sorting knowledge, knowledge that is hard to acquire in ways other than participation in a radical group. Things like advanced weapons knowledge or explosives knowledge, or, and this is less intuitive, knowledge about sort of jihad culture, knowledge about jihadi poetry, jihadi songs, jihadi history. The jihadi culture universe has grown quite big. There's a lot there to learn, and you know, if you're an imposter, you can't easily fake that. You can of course copy and paste things, but if people sort of quiz you in an exchange on the forums, the depth of your cultural knowledge is probably exposed quite quickly. And so people who can display deep cultural knowledge, deep jihadi cultural knowledge, are probably more likely to be trusted, and presumably people also look for that type of information. But I must stress that I don't have kind of the full answer to how people trust one another, and these the things I mentioned in my piece are just some a small selection of kind of potential strategies. Because the problem is, as I mentioned earlier, people haven't written down what happens when they trust, and they have there are no accounts in which people describe in detail exactly what made them trust another person, or exactly which signs they were looking for. So it's hard to tell what's really going on in people's heads in these exchanges.
So I'm sort of curious, and I mean, if deep cultural knowledge is the signifier that people should trust this account and this user, I mean, is this an effective use of counterintelligence? And in the sense, what I mean is, in sort of countering fabrication and potential infiltration and potential falsehood. Or, I mean, you know, how does, you know, what are the sort of inherent protections against fabrication and sort of infiltration?
Well, the thing about signs of trustworthiness and what we call sort of signaling knowledge is that it is constantly evolving, because, you know, there's a constant sort of strategic game going on between the trusters and what we call them the mimics, this knowledge evolves because mimics constantly try and imitate the signs that seem to be, you know, that seem to instill trust. But at some point, the trusters realize that the mimics are fooling them, and so they start looking for other things. And I think the same, so there's an expiry date on all signs, on all signs. So, you know, if every, you know, kind of online government counterterrorism official starts to sort of, you know, display jihadi, talk about jihadi poetry and music on the forums in an attempt to instill trust in targets, then it won't take long, I think, before that the value of those signs will be watered out. So there's an expiry date to that type of knowledge, I think. So we have to be aware that this is an evolving body of knowledge that is shaped by the strategic game between trusters and mimics. But it does, the principle, though, should be, should hold for this general dynamic. So we can use these principles, this principle about, differential cost can help us, make some hypotheses or expectations about what sort of the next, reliable sign or sign category will be. Value, I think, in thinking more about this and about how trust is established, not just on the forums, but also in other on other internet platforms. In this paper, I've only looked at the forums, but I think there's a huge job, an analysis job to be done on trust on Facebook, for example, and on Twitter and elsewhere.
So I want to ask this question. What would you consider to be the success and the failures of the forums? And sort of, I want to say in three broad categories, in terms of radicalization, in terms of recruitment, in terms of operations. You know, would you say that these forums have been sort of successful in maybe bringing up and spreading propaganda, but sort of fail in the category of recruitment and even sort of operational planning that would require a high degree of trust? You know, what would you consider the success and failures of the forums, basically?
Yeah, I think the categories that you mentioned provide the answer to the question. I basically think that the forums are extremely useful for radicalization, for basically creating the motivation in people to join a jihadi group or to help jihadi groups in some way. That is what the propaganda does. So the forums are a very, very useful mechanism for disseminating jihadi propaganda and exposing a global audience to jihadi rhetoric. However, as my paper seems to suggest, the forums are much less useful for direct recruitment. This is not a place where the unwitting users can be approached by a recruiter be given a meeting, an address to meet, and be sort of initiated into Al-Qaeda. That is not what the forums are for. And likewise with operational coordination, the forums are not, it seems, being used to coordinate and plan operations, because that would be much too risky for the planners. I think that insight, you know, is useful. It's useful to know exactly what the forms are used for and what the limits and their Achilles heel is. And there are some, I think, important implications for other platforms here too. If it is the case that the trust problem is one of the main things that limits the utility of forums for terrorists, then we should try and exaggerate or make that problem larger on other platforms too. We should make the trust problem bigger on Facebook and on Twitter, so that terrorists cannot use those platforms either for direct recruiting and planning.
So I'm sort of curious then, I mean, in terms of intelligence collection, forums and Facebook and Twitter, YouTube are, you know, sort of wonderful, you know, platforms. It's very easy just to, you know, sit in front of your laptop and sort of go through the information. But I'm sort of curious if you create a trust problem in terms of recruitment and operations on the forums and on Facebook, wouldn't these sort of networks shift? So the example I want to use is sort of the idea that if you don't recruit from the internet, you know, the idea is that you would start recruiting from, you know, wherever you're based, you know, person to person contact, building a network from, you know, peer to peer in real life. And, you know, that seems to me, you know, much more difficult to sort of understand, to sort of wrap a intelligence apparatus around. I mean, you know, is there sort of a trade-off between, you know, being able to observe what's going on in the forums and sort of what's happening in terms of recruitment and operations?
Not really. I mean, I think the real life recruiting goes on anyway, and I think it's always going to be the sort of the main dimension in which direct recruiting takes place, and better, I think, to have the recruiting take place in the real world, because first of all, it limits the range of the recruiters to the area that they can reach, you know, either physically by travel or by using bilateral outreach with electronic, you know, communication like phones or email or something else. So, and that is, you know, that limits the number of people that can be, you know, recruited. You know, it would be much more dangerous to have, you know, a recruiting platform online, because the they would just reach a much bigger market. So it's a lesser evil to have them in the real world than to have recruiting take place in the real world than online, in my view.
So for my last question, I guess you haven't read Inspire 12, and so. But there was in Inspire 12, there was this idea mentioned of the open source jihad, you know, in the sense that you could grab information and insights from the internet, from forums. So I'm sort of curious, I mean, you know, has this sort of jihad, this global jihad, been open sourced in the sense that all this information is freely available? And so anybody anywhere with access to these forums has access to this information and would be able to act. I mean, is this sort of, does your research sort of back this up, or is this sort of, you know, really it's it doesn't exist, and it's really, you know, old fashioned, I guess.
Well, what the authors of Inspire are, you know, hoping to do is make individuals around the world pick up a weapon and attack, you know, without consulting with more senior operatives or other jihadi contacts, because they think, you know, that is going to be more difficult for governments to spot. You know, they want an army of lone wolves, basically. But the problem and the kind of the lack of realism in that is that it's very rare for people to develop a motivation to use extreme violence alone. That motivation almost always develops in collaboration or in communication with other human beings, and often, and often that communication can take place online or in or it can take place in the real world. But the point is, you know, for someone to develop a motivation to kill at that scale, they usually have to interact with someone who is at the more advanced stage of radicalization than themselves. And those people, those more advanced, the more radical people, you know, are more likely to be on some government's radar. So, and by monitoring the, you know, the facilitators or the more, you know, the more radical members of sort of the jihadi network, you can spot more easily the budding kind of operatives, and often in reality, when the radicalization process, you know, involves a lot of kind of online interaction. So by the time a person reaches the point where he's ready to carry out an operation, he's already left behind lots and lots of traces online, you know, be it a Facebook profile or you know, browsing history on jihadi forums and whatnot, which can be exploited by intelligence services. So the Inspire message sounds very scary, but it's just not very realistic, because the number of people who kind of, you know, who are out there with a completely clean slate, and at the same time with the willingness to carry out mass murder is very small. I'm not saying they don't exist. We have examples of that, but they're very few and far between.
Well, I think you've answered a lot of questions today, and thank you so much. You know, usually we like to end our interviews where the guest has the last word or leaves us with a comment to sort of think about. So give us the last word before we sort of end the interview.
Well, I guess that would be sort of the policy implication of this, which is of my paper, which is that we should exploit this trust problem that the jihadis have more than we do today. We should probably, you know, go after, you know, Facebook groups and so on more aggressively than is the case today, so that those platforms are not used for recruitment and other things. One of the things I've been seeing over the past few years is not only the partial migration from the forums to Facebook and Twitter. So Facebook and Twitter are taking a greater market share, in a sense, away from the forums. But the type of information that people are revealing on Facebook, for example, is more sensitive than what they reveal on the forums. There is, in other words, a certain amount of trust between forums, between users on Facebook, and in the case of particular types of activity like recruitment to Syria, where the, you know, where the risk of sanction is relatively low, because countries, you know, have, you know, unclear legislation on fighting in Syria. The recruiting is there is what I would actually what I would call, you know, direct recruiting going on for Syria via Facebook, and that I think is dangerous, and if we want to, you know, limit the number of people who go to Syria and engage in other types of activity on Facebook, we should exploit the trust problem.
Thank you so much for coming on. Don't forget, if you want to check out Thomas's paper, it's Interpersonal Trust, or excuse me, book chapter, Interpersonal Trust on Jihadi Internet Forums. It's going to appear in Fight, Flight, Mimic, Identity Signaling in Armed Conflicts. And so that volume will be coming out here shortly. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.